When I first heard Meursault long ago in a little basement bar in Edinburgh, I was blown away by both the power and sensitivity of the work. Ranging from wistful, soul-haunting ballads to straight-up rock, seeing Neil Pennycook and band play live was a mesmerizing experience. So I was super pleased when their third album, Something for the Weekend, started getting notice all over the place and was even shortlisted for the Scottish Album of the Year Award in 2013. Their follow-up to Something for the Weekend is called The Organ Grinder's Monkey from Song by Toad Records. The concept of the album was something of a surprise when I first heard it, and I spoke to Neil about this special record just before he and the band flew off to the South by Southwest Festival in Austin and a series of gigs in North America. They'll be in Charlotte, North Carolina, Philadelphia, PA, and of course Austin, Texas throughout March. You can find out more about their dates and how to get a hold of their music on meursault.com.
It's the multicolored cultural laser. We travel the world for the boys and the girls, casting pots of wonder and amazement. Multicolored cultural laser.
Meursault, you've been around for a while now as a band, and you decided to put out this kind of interesting album. Can you explain to people just where this record came from? Because it's different in a way than your other albums.
Yeah, it's not that sort of classic sit down, write an album, record album, put it out kind of thing. We wanted to try and figure out a way of generating the required finances without feeling terrible about ourselves. So we figured we'd do the crowdsourcing thing in the best way possible. You know, we want to make sure that the people that are donating and helping the band get their money's worth. And we arrived at this idea of doing this covers record. So the fans, you know, they pledge a certain amount of money. They pick the songs that we play on the record. In theory, that's how it works. Over the course of the campaign, you know, you'd pledge however much money, you know, be it between like £5 or £300. And everyone that pledges, they choose five songs that they would in theory like to hear Meursault cover. So we ended up with this huge list of songs to choose from, and we sort of whittled that down and ended up with the album that we've got now, The Organ Grinder's Monkey.
Why did you feel like you needed to have, I guess, community involvement in the record to make sure that that people were getting something extra than just whatever random perks you would have set up, like a gig ticket or something?
Well, having been sort of slightly wary, I think every musician or artist or whatever that's using crowdsourcing should be slightly wary of it and should do a bit of research and look at what's gone before them. A lot of people doing crowdsourcing, they'll be doing it for, you know, perfectly viable reasons. You know, they want to put out a record or they want to go on tour. But in my eyes, it has to be, if you're going to lean on your audience to that degree, it has to be for a very sort of specific and, for want of a better word, like a special project. You know, we've released three records now. If it was just Meursault releasing their fourth record and need money to do it, I kind of think that's a little bit shaky ground. It has to be something that's really going to help advance the band.
But it's special, right? Like, it's a big deal. You've never been to America before. You're getting out of the UK. Like, to crack America in even a small way is a super difficult and ambitious thing. And with a full band,
yeah,
super expensive.
Yeah. I can't emphasize that enough. It's super fucking expensive.
You got to get things across the ocean. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I was saying, it's that sort of feeling of, if you are going to rely on the audience to that degree, you have to absolutely go out of your way to make sure they're getting their money's worth. And I've worked pretty much consistently on this album now I've probably put more work into this one album than I've put into any other thing that I've ever done, but just in a really sort of confined amount of space.
Do you think that comes from the fact that you kind of came up from just playing songs in basically your bedroom, right? If I remember, you know, like you came up with a very DIY thing. So putting out a record maybe doesn't feel like that ambitious of a project. Like, if you want to put out a record, you can put out a record.
You can do that. Yeah,
you don't need them. I don't know how much you were looking for it to get, but you don't need $250,000. As Paul Vickers from The Leg and Dawn of the Replicants told me once, he said, "You don't need £250,000 to put out a record."
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like, yeah, you're kind of right. Like, we've always known that from the first sort of record we put out. We realized very quickly this is the way we want to operate. And it'd be a lie, actually, to say it's do-it-yourself. There's actually very little about what I do that's DIY. Like, I rely on people, be it even just friends and family and things like that, more than you would think. Certainly all the artists I kind of admire and look up to conduct themselves in this kind of fashion, where they go out their way to make sure that they're not relying on big advances from labels or publishers. It's a bit of a death trap, it would seem. And thankfully, I kind of came to it quite late. You know, I started making music in my late 20s as opposed to, like, you know, my late teens, which most people do. So I'd seen a lot of friends go through it all, and, you know, certain bands get sort of chewed up and spat out and stuff. And yeah, I realised really quickly that's not a route I wanted to go down. So trying to keep everything as in-house, I guess, is a better word to use than DIY, because that is just a lie. But
DIY, now that you say it, sounds really almost arrogant in a way, well, right? Isn't that really do it yourself? Is it do it ourselves? Do it together? Yeah, right?
Yeah, totally. I think it can be quite misleading when you hear the terms like DIY. You do think like, okay, so the musician, you know, plays everything, records everything, releases it all himself, and does all the PR, and, you know, books the tours, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's not really how it works. It's just more about everyone involved is kind of the same mindset and of the same sort of, you know, has the same ideals.
It's not Neil Pennycook, the lone wolf of Meursault.
No, I wouldn't.
You've got loads of people, and your band is even, I guess, in somewhat of a collective kind of ever-shifting form, the way, say, Woodpigeon in Canada or Withered Hand here in Edinburgh.
The best way to explain it, I guess, is it's not a solo artist, it's not a band necessarily. It's Meursault acts best as basically the catch-all name that the music exists under, you know what I mean? It's not necessarily descriptive of the people making it, it's the description of the music is called Meursault. I guess that's the best way to think about it.
Wow, it's not an album by Meursault, it's Meursault's The Organ Grinder's Monkey. Yeah, I can kind of, I see exactly what you're
it's
saying.
It's a good collective name. Yeah. I guess I don't think about it too much.
Because it sounds like it's the kind of thing that could break your head really easily.
Yeah, totally.
Can Meursault be Meursault if Neil Pennycook isn't in it?
Yeah, no. That would.
So when you were putting this album together, you had, you know, would have had hundreds of songs, probably some quite hilarious ones. Mm-hmm. But you made a pretty serious album. It sounds like a Meursault album. It fits in to the canon of what you've done. It doesn't feel like it's an anomaly or in any way gimmicky or anything like that. It feels very much like yours. How conscious were you when you were crafting it to pick the right songs? Were there points where you were like, I guess we could throw in that Celine Dion one. That'd be funny. You know, like, at what point did you pull back? And because you must have been laughing at some of these, the choices, not maybe laughing, but.
I know Matthew from Song by Toad Records, he actually had the sort of the actual list itself with the names of the people that had chosen the songs. And I very strictly, I was like, I don't want to see who's picked the songs necessarily, because that can influence the decision. You know, it's like, oh, Sam the drummer's granny picked, you know, Yes Sir, I Can Boogie. We have to do that now, or, you know, you won't get a Christmas present. You don't want to take that into account. You want to, you know, because there's like about 400 different people all pledging, and they're all picking 5 songs each. So that's a huge list of songs. And it's not just covers, you know, it can be Meursault songs that they just want to hear reinterpreted as well. So you've got 2 massive lists, one of covers, one of Meursault songs. I would say the majority of the songs that made it onto the record, the covers especially, the majority of them, you know, more than one person voted for that song. So, you know, say something like I'll Believe in Anything by Wolf Parade, you know, 7 people voted for that. So that's definitely going on the record. You know, there's no two ways about it. That has to go on. But yeah, there was a lot of just lonely little songs just sitting there waiting to be used. And it helped. It was a nice process to make an album that way.
I mean, there's a lot of sadness and a lot of death in there. Are your fans particularly depressing people to be around?
They don't seem like it. No, I think they're just a little bit like me. They just like kind of miserable music, I guess.
They got a real mood.
That was really cool, in a way, to see such a varied bunch of songs being picked by your fan base, where the vast majority of it was all stuff that, you know, I've got in my record collection. It's like, Mountain Goats. Oh, I love Mountain Goats. You know, Reckless Eric. Fucking love that song. I didn't even know it, but I've always wanted to cover that song. This is so cool. I get to, you know, I've got an excuse to do this. And that was a really cool part about it. guess it does sort of put you a little bit more in touch with like who your fans are, who the people that are buying your records and coming to your shows, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah. And I guess it must be really nice, because like if people are saying to you, hey, I'd like to hear you play this, and you must have realized, oh wow, these people know me, right? Like it's like somebody gives you a book and you read the book and it's great, and you're like, oh wow, that person really thought about who I am, what my concerns are, and knew I would like this, and I do. Like that must have been really super gratifying for you guys.
Yeah, I think it's more that they know the music and they understand the music. I don't think they necessarily know me.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, what I like. Yeah. You do not know Neil Pennycook. If any of you psychopaths are out there listening to this, you don't know him.
Unless you do know me. All of them, I would say, they were all considered choices. You know, they weren't. There were a few funny ones in there. You know, Yes Sir, I Can Boogie, that was in there. And in a funny way, that would have been quite cool to do that. But, you know, it's some of them were just, you know, for fun. But a lot of them were, like you say, they were considered and they were choices chosen by people that clearly have given my music an awful lot of time. And, you know, they know it really well. And, yeah.
Well, let's listen to the Mountain Goats song. It's called No Children. It's totally one of my favorites. I was so happy. When I listened to the record, I didn't know the concept behind it. I didn't know that they were covers. Oh, wow. I couldn't believe I was hearing a Mountain Goat song done by Meursault. I was so happy about it. And, you know, it's one of those ones that have these great lines that anybody going through a breakup and stuff has got to love this song, right?
Yeah, I certainly do. It means an awful lot to me. And, this one just kind of jumped out at me from that list. Just screamed at me, you're doing this song.
I hope that you remain friends. Up on trying to save her. I hope we come up with a fail-safe plot to piss off the dumb few that forget her. And I hope the fences we mend fall down beneath their own weight. And I hope we hold on past the last exit. I hope it's already too late. And I hope the junkyard a few blocks from here someday burns down. And I hope the rising black smoke carries me far away, and I never come back to this town again. In my life, I hope I lie and tell everyone you were a good wife, and I hope you die. I hope we both die. Self-shaving tomorrow, and I hope it bleeds all day long. Our friends say it's darkest before the sun rises. We're pretty sure they're all wrong. Well, I hope it stays dark forever, and I hope the worst isn't over. And I hope you blink before I do, and I hope I never get sober. And I hope when you think of me years down the line, you can't find one good thing to say. And I hope that if I found the strength to walk out, you would stay the hell out of my way. I am drunk, there is no sign of life, and you are going down with me. Hard and unlovable hand, and I hope you die. I hope we both die.
No Children from Meursault. It's on the Organ Grinders Monkey. It's originally a Mountain Goat song. But yeah, I think that's kind of like similar to what you do, I think, in your own songs as well, is this sort of like exultant darkness Like, right, like we were talking about the hand and unlovable hand, or I hope you die. But it's revelatory, you know, it's joyful, but it's so dark at the same time. It's this weird line that I think you're able to walk as a songwriter.
It's something that I care quite a lot about, especially like when it's not necessarily that songwriters are afraid to write about the darker things in life. It's just that I think a lot of the writers around, and I'm not going to name any names, obviously, but a lot of the writers going around, they're far too quick to write themselves as the victim or as the good guy within that. You know, I think it's really important that people just write freely. Be the bad guy in your own story. You know, it doesn't matter how it reflects on you. People are too worried about how they are perceived through their writing. It's like, that's not something that you should be particularly concerned with. You know, like, paint yourself as the baddie, paint yourself as the dickhead. People will relate to it even more. You know, if you do that, it's like, we've all got that in us, you know.
Right. Otherwise, so like the idea of like, oh, I'm the guy who's been spurned and my love has left me. Now I'm wandering in a field of dried flowers.
Yeah. Well, especially in this kind of like, you know, modern folk sort of shit that gets churned out at the moment and on sort of Radio 1 and stuff like that, is the sort of running, every time I listen to this stuff, which isn't very often, admittedly, but every time I do, there seems to be this common sort of theme running through it, which is, from the songwriter's perspective, I've been wronged and I've been through hell, but I will overcome and I will, you know, I'll beat this. And, you know, it's, oh, it drives me fucking nuts. It's all just, oh man, just listen to any of these bands. Like, every single chorus starts with the words I will. It's uncanny.
And it's not, it doesn't make, I mean, to me, I think that's the thing that's good about songwriting or good novels or good poetry, this idea that your protagonist doesn't always have to be right or good.
No.
And all, even if it's you or it's semi-autobiographical, you're not always right or good. And to deny that.
Exactly.
Is to deny why breakups happen.
Writing, you know, if that's the way you go down, you constantly want to portray yourself in a good light, then it's not honest writing, and it's therefore worthless.
Yeah, true. We're all jerks sometimes.
Some of the time, some more of the time than others. You know,
let's talk about your own song, because you did put a few of your own on here. Were these voted for? So this one that we're going to play is called A Kind of Cure. Was that voted for, or was that something you?
That was voted for. Yeah, there's only one song on the record that wasn't voted for at all, and we'll get to that later. A Kind of Cure was a song that I wrote specifically for a theatre production directed by Cora Bissett. It was called Whatever Gets You Through the Night, and we played a few shows, both last year and then this year, at Edinburgh Queen's Hall, and I guess a couple of people really wanted to hear that song out with the context, which is quite an interesting thing to do, you know, because for the theatre production it was just me, it wasn't with the band, so it was kind of nice to do it with those guys and see what sort of came out of the song. Yeah, it brought different things out, I guess.
I mean, maybe this was similar. Was it a similar feeling? Because I know you had to, which one was the vinyl one that you had to re-record?
Pissing on Bonfires, Kissing with Tongues. Yeah, the first album I ever made, I didn't know what I was doing when it came to mixing, and I mixed it all onto MP3 instead of waveform, for any music boffins out there, and they know what the fuck I'm talking about, because I certainly didn't at the time. So the album only existed on MP3, and then the computer that I did all that on, that broke. So we lost any chance of ever converting it to waveform. So to ever release it on vinyl, and this was kind of just before the vinyl resurgence that album came out. So there have been a lot of people sort of asking, well, not a lot of people, but a lot of people within the context of people that listen to Meursault Records. You know,
percentage-wise, yeah.
Yeah. They were asking, you know, are we ever going to get this on vinyl? And it just, you know, the fifth birthday of the label came about, and, you know, I work with the label pretty closely, and it seemed like a nice thing to do. How would we do it? And it turned out the only way to do it was for me to record the album note by note, basically, again. So we did that. And that was a learning experience, but fun as well. Because the thing is, you do stuff like this, normally the only time you get the chance to do something like that is after like a sort of 10th year anniversary or 20 years or 50 years. So to go back and revisit an album you did 5 years ago, it doesn't actually feel that cheeky or that sort of bad. It's not the distant past. I think it's really easy to think, especially working in music, because time passes so quickly and the life expectancy of bands just isn't very long most of the time, and a lot of people don't stick it out longer than a record, so you think 5 years, fuck, that's a long time, and it's really not. It's 5 years ago, it's nothing at all. You know, I've only released you know, a handful of records since then. So it's not, you know, it's not like I'm dipping into my past or bringing out this old relic from my, you know, a bygone era. It's not like that. It's just, you know, it's a really viable chance to revisit a bit of work which is still quite fresh and quite...
It's still you, right? Yeah, and I guess I'm wondering how, because it seems maybe it's like almost the inverse of this, the organ grinder's monkey, in that with that you had these songs that you had loved or you'd presented before that you could do anything you wanted to, and re-recording Pissing on Bonfires.
Yeah.
What was that struggle like to be like, oh, if I just...
Quite early on, I decided, no, I'm not going to do it note by note, and I'm just going to do it. Yeah, as soon as I got myself in that headspace, like I was saying, of it not being that long ago, and actually, if I fuck around with these songs a little bit, I'm not going to say no one's not going to be, you know, there might be like the odd sort of Meursault purist out there that's like, I can't believe, oh man, you can't re-record The Furnace and it, you know, not sound exactly the same, but ah, fuck them. Yeah, it just made sense to just, you know, play with it a little bit and, you know, although only 5 years have passed, you know, just see how I would approach those songs now. And yeah, it's a different record. It's definitely a different record. It's the same source material, but just, you know, maybe just drawn with the left hand instead of the right or something like that. You know, it's kind of weird.
Did you do it in the same like space and stuff as well? Did you do it, or no, did you get a studio and you went and got proper studio engineering?
No. We don't record in studios.
Excuse me. Sorry. You went to the garage.
We did it in what we call our studio, Song by Toad HQ. But I mean, the first time I recorded that album, I recorded it. You know, I plugged a 20 quid microphone into the output jack of my MacBook. And did it that way and thought that was a perfectly viable way to do it. And it is. It's nothing wrong with that at all. But, you know, we've got a couple of new toys since then, you know, so I took advantage of that. And it was done with the same spirit. Let's put it that way. You know, maybe not with the same equipment, but with the same spirit. So.
And that spirit, I guess, let's have a listen to A Kind of Cure.
Just as I was planted, all bitter and frantic, you bit me and I was awake. And I gave up my faith and all manner of ways I had used to keep you fresh in mind. And these memories will drill their way. So removed from the truth. And it was nothing you said, it was nothing you gave. It was all just a dream in my brain. Was all I had asked for, or so it seems. There is no need to question it now. As it has already left me to never return, and I'll be cursing its name until my very last day. Memories will drill their way into a thought so removed from the truth. And it was nothing you said, and it was nothing you gave. And it was all just a dream in my brain.
That was A Kind of Cure. You can hear it on The Organ Grinder's Monkey, which is the new album from Merceau. Where's the best place for people to get your records?
You go to songbytoadrecords.com. You can buy them online there. You can buy them in any good record store that isn't on the high street. But then there's none of those anyway, so...
they don't exist.
Yeah, that's become less of a problem. This one, you'll only be able to buy this at gigs for the time being.
Oh man, you've got to release it. By the way, the stuff that Song by Toad has been releasing is fantastic. That's such a lovely relationship to see existing for so long. 5 years is a while. Did he put out your first record as well?
Yeah. I put out the initial run myself. That wasn't working. So Matthew was just he was coming to a lot of shows, and the label was just kind of just starting up at the time. And yeah, we both like gin and hating things, so it seemed like a good relationship to encourage, and it's been great. You know, we work really well together. There was a bit of a sort of period of uncertainty around the last record where I kind of got the jitters a little bit, and it was like that sort of thing where it's like our third record and we'd put more money behind the third one. It was like, well, let's see if we can push this to one of the bigger labels. And if I could go back and slap my past self, I really would, because it was most uncharacteristic of me. We thought for a little while, let's engage with the music industry and see where we can get. Let's see how big we can push it. And it was just a really poisonous frame of mind, really. It got to a certain point where I realised that to make a comfortable amount of money, like, you know, to make a lot of money from releasing records, there were certain things that I would have to do, and there were certain processes that would have to change that would ultimately ruin the experience for me, and the art would suffer, like, catastrophically. And also sort of realising that, you know, I was kind of happy working within the confines that we had, that we'd already established, you know, working with Matthew and with the band that I had. And I can't help but think there's a lot of musicians and artists kind of ruin themselves through trying to make the product as big as it can be and as far-reaching as it can be, rather than the emphasis being on making the work as good as it can be.
So it seems like a really hard decision to go from that kind of indie spirit and then try to engage in the bigger world where you get more distribution, you get access to people in a different way, you get access to radio stations in a different way, and you get airplay in a different way. But it seems both like it's personally exhausting and also kind of creatively exhausting and not even that financially solvent. It doesn't seem like it makes it, and it's a hard decision, but it's there, and that's so tempting to be able to reach more people. It must be a real stress.
I think fundamentally as well, the personal realization that the music that I make and the music that I listen to and the artists that I love, they don't belong in that sphere. And that's not a defeatist attitude by any means, I don't think.
I read somewhere the music was described as epic lo-fi, which I quite like. And this is pretty much the epicest of epics.
Well, that's the one sort of part of the new record that we've not really touched on, I forgot to mention, is that it's all recorded live. I think this record, the reason that I feel that it is so fully formed and I'm so proud of it, is that it's the closest thing that I've done so far that sounds like us on a stage on record. Like I was saying, there's one song on the record that wasn't chosen, and it's Vasistas. We wanted to, you know, it might be a little while before the next original Merceau record comes out, and this is one of the songs from that record. So it's just a little sort of, I guess, a taster or a teaser, whatever you want to say. We just thought it'd be a nice thing to include, you know.
It's an arrow or a bullet going in a really particular direction, man. It's going fast and hard. I mean, it's great. Why German?
I won't explain the name too much. The song generally, if you want to sort of read into it too much, the song's kind of about growing up in a small town and sort of releasing yourself from the shackles of that sort of way of thinking. Yeah, sort of growing out of a small town mentality, I guess. It was just sort of talking about this kind of stuff, I think, while we were on tour last with one of the members of the band, and yeah, that sort of Vasistas term kept popping up and it just stuck, you know. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it's not some great philosophical reasoning behind it, it just is.
Neil, thanks so much, man. This is Vasistas.
It will be going on general sale. We're just making sure that the people that paid for this record to be made, we're making sure they all get it first. Yeah. So it will be on general release, so just stay tuned and hold your horses.
or go to a show and buy a record at a show. Don't be one of those people that go to shows and try to buy handbags or any of that stuff. Buy a record, man. These guys make music. They don't make t-shirts. did not get into the business to make t-shirts. So this is Vasistas. The album is The Organ Grinder's Monkey from Merceau, put out by Song by Toad Records. And Neil, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. Really appreciate it. I want you guys to listen to this for the full length of the track. Don't get up. Don't check your email. Don't check your texts. Don't look on Twitter. Just sit there and listen. We'll be right back.